Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. My name is Matt Hudson, from What I Watched Tonight, and joining me from across the pond is my transatlantic movie brother, the statesman to my kingsman. It's John Burke from Burke Reviews. How are you, sir?
I am doing okay today, Matt. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. I am doing really well. It's been really cold and rainy today. The fall season is upon us, my friend. It's a coming, and I know we're going to have a bright, cheery conversation today. But that ahead, are you keeping Florida safe?
Oh, you know, I do my part. It's always a day, and things are moving. It's raining kind of right now. Like it's nice, not nice. Raining at my house, but you can see that it's coming this way. So. It's always kind of storming here. We have hurricane just hit Texas. There's a hurricane like off the coast of Africa that might be heading this way. So who knows? There was one that hit Louisiana the week before. Yes. So like it's the end of the season and it's ramping up apparently because they're just popping off. The one that hit Texas today shares the name with my cousin, so I had to message him like, "Hey, leave Texas alone." You know.
And did it work?
No, I haven't heard much of an update, but it didn't sound like Texas was doing. I don't know how bad it is. It kind of came out of nowhere. Like I had no idea there was another one already looming. And normally Florida is like always on the alert, but I guess this one was never coming at us. So we didn't hear about it, or at least I didn't hear about it.
No, well, whilst the world falls apart around us in more ways than one, we're always here each week to talk about films on the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. We speak about the biggest release of the week. Or the most mainstream, or the most talked about release, and that's certainly what we're doing tonight. And just a disclaimer, non-spoilers, this episode, the main episode is always non-spoilers, and then on Monday we'll drop our spoiler-filled thoughts in a mini-episode. So for tonight, we're going to give you a non-spoiler review and thoughts and opinions on Malignant. You might have heard of it online this week. It's directed by and written by James Wan. I was looking at the next name, which is Ingrid Bissu, which I believe is his wife. The D threw me off in Ingrid. So James Wan, Ingrid Bissu, and Akila Cooper wrote this, and it stars Annabelle Wallace, Maddie Hassan, George Young, Nicole Brianna White, and Jean Louisa Kelly. The synopsis from IMDb reads: Madison, Annabelle Wallace, is paralyzed by shocking visions of grisly murders, and her torment worsens as she discovers that these waking dreams are in fact terrifying realities. The terrifying reality is Rotten Tomatoes has this at 76% and the critic rating 50 on Metascore. We'll get into that. 6.3 IMDb user and 3.2 out of 5 on Letterboxd. So looking at that, you know, above average ratings there. So, you know, we'll go in with that.
Before you get into your review, which is the protocol of Matt's intro, he goes first. But I want to point out an important little caveat.
Always.
Micola? Is that how you're saying that?
I think I said Nicole, which may Nicole. Or may not be
okay,
wrong.
Okay, that makes more sense. Do you know what Birkenfield's favorite 90s movie she happens to be in?
Say Encino Man.
Encino Man. The connections continue is all I'm saying. It's a Brendan Fraser renaissance, everybody, and Encino Man needs to be reevaluated for the masterpiece that it is. She is one of the friends of the girl that Sean Astin's character is in love with. So, yeah. I was like, the whole movie, I'm like, she looks familiar, and then I was looking at her IMDb for this, I'm like, what? And I immediately knew who she was in Encino Man, but like, yeah, obviously that's a long time from 91, I think Encino Man is to
pretty much early 90s. I mean, yeah.
30 years. So, God, dude, 30 years.
Where is the time? Well, bear that in mind when we're talking about this film, that John also is a fan of Encino Man and Hudson Hawk. So just keep that in the back of your mind, everyone.
I would rather rewatch either one of those movies. Let's just put that
out. Well, let's get into it. Released day and date in theatres around the world, but also HBO Max for our North American friends. James Wan's return to horror. He's been called slightly scurrilously and scandalously a master of modern horror. Now, I don't know where the hell he got that name from. Because and look, I like The Conjuring, the first one. I think that's very, very good. I think Insidious is pretty good. But, you know, I'm not going to run out and say he's the new Hitchcock or something like that or anything.
And
like
Saw,
that.
Though. Don't forget
and
Saw.
And Saw, but let's not forget Lee Whannell was part of that. Mm. Look how much better his films are. So, Malignant. Again, we don't give spoilers on there. The only spoiler I'll say is you may have seen that this film is getting a lot of chatter online. People seem to either like it or they don't like it. It is one of those films. There doesn't really seem to be any in between about that, which usually certainly gets us kind of hyped as well. You know, if it gets people talking, we may be more interested in seeing it than the films that get like full out hype all over the place. So I went into this knowing that it was apparently quite a good, and also that some people didn't like it, but I did. Had a good time with this film. It's which is surprising because there's not a lot of good in this film. Yeah, the acting, I'll get out of the way, is average at best. Yeah, the dialogue is below average at best. It's not a scary horror film. What worked for me though, I liked the mystery in this. I didn't, you know, some people are saying they got the twist immediately. I didn't. So I liked the mystery and the way they're kind of building up to it. I liked the twist. I liked the third act, which, yes, was absolutely crazy. I didn't like the end. I thought the end made me giggle because it was really poorly realised. But there was just something about The Malignant which kept my attention. I put in my review, this felt like a director who just was let loose from the franchise world. So Fast and Furious 7, Aquaman, things like that. Coming back to horror and just thinking, do you know what? I'm going to do a film for the fun of it. I'm going to give it those throwback vibes, those, like a lot of people said, and I agree, those giallo vibes with certainly around the character of Madison. Annabelle Wallace is the archetypal giallo character. But there was just something about it. It felt cheesy. It felt camp. And I don't mind that in a horror film. I'm saying this in the full knowledge that I'm usually the one who says, you know, if the story isn't good and the characters aren't good and the dialogue, then how can a film succeed? But so it just, you know, it just felt like a fun, flowy, you know, easygoing horror film. And I know that might not make any sense, but I haven't come out of it thinking it's changed my world. I have come out of it still thinking about that bonkers finale, but a lot of this shouldn't work. And I'll be the first to say that. And I kind of almost preempting John. I know that a lot of this is, by all intents and purposes, not very good. But I was one of the ones who was just drawn in by it. I don't know, maybe I've just wanted a horror film which isn't part of a franchise, which isn't tied into something else, which can just go balls to the wall and go mad as well. If it wasn't for that third act, then the film generally would be not very good. But I don't know, I got sucked in by the mystery, and I got sucked in by, you know, where's this going? What's going on? You know, we've got this character called Gabriel who's in it, who's this kind of seeming like invincible beast almost. There's no spoilers there. I was like, well, where are they going with this? And you've got a cop who just leers over every woman who he comes across, which is very off-put. George Young's character, which is very off-putting. And I find it hard to put into words because a lot of the review I put out was basically saying not a lot of this is very good. But there's something about it. But if you look at those old horror films of the 80s and the 90s, how many of them aren't really very good, but we have a good time watching? Most of the Friday films, even my beloved Nightmare films, Halloween, most of them are cack. Most of them aren't very good, but people enjoy watching them because they've got that certain something about them. And I know that I'm not entirely alone with this thought, because I'm seeing a lot of people really praising this film and really enjoying the kind of like, the refreshing change. But as you may have heard, it didn't work for everyone, and whilst I'm being negative but at the same time, you know, kind of celebrating it because I enjoyed it and had fun and it felt like a throwback, JP, I'm not sure you can say the same, can you?
In the last 2 months, I've watched Troll 2 and The Room, and this movie had a similar reaction, and I happened to watch those three movies. Damn. Malignant, The Room, and Troll 2 with one of the same people. Like every movie I saw of those three had a group of people that went. This time I went with one friend who's seen all of those other ones with me. And then my cousin went this time as well. And we had very similar reactions while watching this movie. Like, we could see each other. We were laughing, but not at times where it was intended necessarily. We were shocked at a lot of the decisions that were being made. I think a lot of the plot is incoherent. And I agree. I was not mad at this movie, and it's not like Slender Man or Winchester, where the movie is actively bad, Truth or Dare, right? Where the movies, I forgot that movie existed till you just said it. Thanks a lot for that, man. Where the movies are actively bad. This, it's not that it's actively bad, but it's still more bad than good. And what my friend that was with me, I think, said it best. Is as far as the story and the script goes, it's like a Frankenstein's monster. And we're not comparing it to the story of Frankenstein's monster. We're saying that this itself feels like a bunch of jumbled pieces stitched together in a way to create a quote unquote movie. And there are some, like, I actually did see the ending coming to a degree. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to say I called it exactly, but I had a pretty good idea of what we were in for from the get go. I think the opening of the movie really establishes the level of crap, because it's like this found footage talking to the camera. There's
it's a really cheesy
throwaway line. Yeah. Now, what Juan does well here is he has a very stylized look in certain scenes that you can't deny looks good.
Work is very good, I find. There's plenty of interesting techniques and angles.
My favorite thing in the whole movie is an overhead shot of her in the house running from room to room. It has a very Hitchcockian kind of vibe to it. It reminds me of also Assassination Nation when they did the really cool one take of the outside of the house. It's not exactly the same, but it has that same vibe and feel. And I really like the innovative stuff like that. Even if you go to Game Night, which is a comedy, but has horror elements in it, when they do the miniatures, you know, like they have the shots of like the game board pieces almost of the neighborhood and stuff like that. Those are really cool shots. Hereditary does it with the miniatures that she makes, and it like merges into the actual shots of the house. I love stuff like that. So I'm a sucker for that. There are scenes though at night where like the fog is like so dense, and there's fog in places that makes no sense, but it still looks really, really cool. I won't deny that it looks cool, but at some point, I know this is always going to be subjective. I do have a certain, I expect things from horror that don't always get delivered. And I understand sometimes that is the movie's not for me. I still see flaws in this one, at least on a storytelling level, that really aggravate me, because I think there's a lot of cool stuff here, but none of it feels completely like focused or fleshed out in a way that makes sense. And maybe, again, that's maybe what he's going for. But I'm like, I think you could strive for a little more. And I'm kind of okay with the ratings, though. Like, 76 Rotten is a little high, but I can still see, again, because I didn't walk out mad. I walked out baffled, and I walked out, you know, like, I'd been laughing, and I was like, oh, man, that was bad. But it did feel like bad, like watching The Room or bad, like watching Troll 2, where it was a fun experience. I did. There's a famous scene from Troll 2 where the guy goes, oh, my God, it's been mean. Yeah. And multiple times while watching Malignant, I was like, insert guy right here, insert that guy right here. Like, there were moments in the movie where it would have benefited from a guy going, oh, my God, as the things that were happening on screen just felt ridiculous. I will say, I don't think there was a bad performance. I didn't love the guy cop. I didn't think he was particularly good. I actually really liked the partner. I thought she put in a lot of work to make it interesting. I mean, Annabelle Wallace is asked to do some pretty crazy stuff in this movie. And some of the CGI looks pretty bad, like, at times, where I'm just like, and a lot of it actually plays into some of my issues I have with the story, which I can't talk about without getting into spoilers, so I won't. But yeah, I don't think this is a good movie. I would say it's more of a bad, fun-to-watch movie. But you made a pretty solid comparison, because I do enjoy watching all the Friday the 13th movies. I think the first one is good, and then I think they progressively get stupid. But I like Jason. I think the first Halloween is a masterpiece. I like Halloween 2. I actually love Season of the Witch, even though I think that's a campy, like, masterpiece. But that night, and I won't get into details, but we watched another movie that night, which is going to come back into play later in the episode, that I think does camp perfectly. And this movie doesn't feel like the campiness is fully intentional to me. And I obviously I don't have any inside information or not, but the camp feels like bad writing versus intentionally written camp. Yeah. And that, I think, is a fine line between a person's take on this film. If you are watching this and like, oh, this is so clearly intentional, and clearly the bad dialogue and all this is intentional for setting up a tone or a mood, I didn't feel that way. I do, though. You saw Pig as well, right?
Oh, I did, yeah. I enjoyed that an awful lot.
I think it's interesting that we got two movies this year that talk about the Seattle Underground. Like, yes. I'm not, I don't know if Pig's in Seattle, right? Or is it Oregon?
Seattle. I'm sure it's Seattle.
Because there's like the whole thing with like when he goes to the one restaurant, like they go underground or whatever in Pig, and there's an element of that here. I had no idea. I'm from the States, no clue about Seattle being built on top of an old city of Seattle. I was just like, hold up, what now? So I'm very intrigued by that whole premise, and I'm kind of curious. So I like that. Again, I don't know that it really played a role in the movie so much. I guess kind of, not really. There's a lot in this. There's a lot in this movie. And some scenes that are ridiculous, like where they go out of their way and it's like 3 seconds and then we're done with that scene. It's like, why did this happen? Like, this could have been explained in a conversation or a phone call or something way faster than what I would have imagined the cost of having this character travel to this location for 3 seconds of a shot where literally nothing happens was excess, like did not need to go, which if it's a smaller, again, I think that's part of the problem with Juan. I think when he had a lot of limitations on him, you were getting a lot better quality work. And now, yes, this is a breakaway from a franchise, but he's still James Wan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he has a green light for probably whatever he wants to make. I think, you know, you see that on like some of it you see on like with the special effects and stuff, like, yes, clearly he had some money, but then there's things like that where it just feels like, well, no one told him no. So he did it anyways. And I think that's a problem for some filmmakers. I think I think we're getting, Nolan's probably like one movie away from maybe going too far, you know, that he's been given too many green lights. Maybe it's time to pull back the reins a little on Nolan. Because Tenet's pretty out there. Like, I like Tenet, but it's pretty out there. And I think Juan has hit that same level of success. I do not agree with him being called master of horror. I think there's more bad movies attached to Juan than there are good movies. I am not, I think Aquaman is fine, but I do not think it's great. I did mostly enjoy it, but I also saw, I thought it was, you know, there's some stuff in Aquaman I just thought was bad. I thought it was a little long. I do like Furious 7. I do question though, if that's a favorite because of Paul Walker's death being attached to that movie. Cause I think the Justin Lin movies are the best of the Fast and Furious films.
I'm not sure about if any of them are really that good.
Ah, I forget. See, that's, this is where we're on. And I do want to point out, though, a year, even 2 years ago, I actively admitted that horror was not a genre that I found myself drawn to. I have really dove into horror over the last year and a half, and I feel like I'm kind of coming around to appreciating more of it. I do want to reevaluate some things, but I saw one guy on Twitter compare this movie to Giallo horror, which apparently is very hard to nail down what movies qualify as Giallo.
It has elements of it, absolutely. And I do believe that it does. Again, a lot of that comes from the Madison character. Giallo is, a lot of the tropes of that is you have a woman, female who's haunted, who is tormented by these visions or these hallucinations or whatever. That is a Giallo trope. And again, a lot of the kind of psychedelic camera work plays into that,
yes,
as well. So I do believe, having seen some like the Argento films and that, it does lend a debt to them.
So does Suspiria fall into that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought so.
Very much so.
That is a movie I'm on record not enjoying either version of it. And I do understand that it is beautiful and all of that, but as a movie, I did not enjoy the experience of watching it. And I don't mean like a horror movie, you're not necessarily supposed to enjoy, right? Quote unquote. Like, it's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable or scared or terrified. That's not what I mean. I mean, I generally thought it was bad. I was bored or I didn't enjoy, like, I wasn't compelled by the plot. I wasn't scared. I didn't find Malignant to be particularly scary or tense. It did have a few triggering things, and there's a lot of gore, I guess. A lot of the gore looked bad to me, though. Like, the blood was clearly CG blood, and I just looked bad. In my opinion, again, but I didn't find any of the gore in this particularly gruesome. I thought it was like interesting, and there were a couple of shots where it was like, oh, like the aftermath shots of things, which I don't feel like that's a spoiler because it's a horror movie. There's going to be stuff.
Going to be death.
And some of the others, like some of the non-kill related gore, I thought was interesting. don't necessarily think it was good, but interesting. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole thing in a jail cell that I thought was one of the dumbest things in this movie, which, again, I can't get into details. More like the people in the jail cell. I thought, like, the blatant stereotyping.
Yeah, exactly. I knew you were going to say that, because this is it. I enjoyed this film. I give it a thumbs up. But I have also, like you would have done, and probably the listeners, I've seen it, and I'm not going to denigrate or say this is a bad thing, but I've seen a lot of people online saying that this is a classic and a modern classic. High rewatchability. It's a return to form for the genre. I think like that. I'm thinking, well, for me, look, I liked it, but I don't think it's any of those things. I mean, as I watched it, I was sucked in by it. I saw it at the cinema. Maybe that helped. And you know, I was in. You know, I was like, this is great. Had I watched it at home, if I'd had access to HBO Max or if it came out on Blu-ray, would I have had the same kind of experience? Who knows? Brings you back to the theatrical versus streaming argument again. But I don't think it's any of those kind of superlatives. And I don't believe for a second that James Wan is a master of modern horror.
Nope.
Saw is a good film. I think The Conjuring is a very good film.
Yes.
Insidious is a good film, but they don't need to be touchstones or milestones as a genre. And of course they don't, but I don't think that there's anything really about them that sets them apart from, you know, any other films, like an Ari Aster film or more recently, yeah, Jordan Peele or like an Alex Garland sci-fi horror type thing. I think, you know,
I enjoyed The Night House far more than I enjoyed this movie.
I still need to see that, but actually funny that I saw people comparing this, because you've had Candyman in between, but for kind of more original horror, The Night House is one of the more recent releases, and obviously Malignant as well. And it's been an interesting debate because obviously they're vastly different in terms of tone, atmosphere and execution. But I totally understand everything you're saying. And one of my other friends also thinks this was just garbage and cannot fathom why anyone likes it. But that's the fun of it. And as for the kind of the 80s throwback comparison, I'm coining that because I haven't seen anyone say that. So that's mine. If anyone else says it, they copy it off me. But that's kind of how I saw it as, you know, you sit down, you watch these films, there's like a slasher element to it. You have fun, you come out of it and don't think, oh, Friday the 13th part 8 was a masterpiece. But, you know, you might come out and think, well, wasn't that cool when Jason did this, and then you move on and you get on with it. That's kind of how I saw this film. But as an experience watching it, I enjoyed it. And especially that completely crazy third act, which we'll mention and probably dissect a bit more in the spoiler episode. But I give it a thumbs up, man.
I say thumbs down. But again, if you are one for movies that are so bad they can be entertaining, I did say, like, I can't deny that I found that part of it to be, like, more enjoyable than, again, like Slender Man or Winchester. I was never bored in this movie. I definitely was not bored, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
well, that's a positive, yeah.
Yeah, it my companions, they said it felt like it was never going to end, kind of thing. I actually felt like it moved pretty well. I didn't think it had a pacing issue at all. I thought, if anything, there are some moments where I think it moves like, okay, slow down, like take a second to breathe. But overall, I thought I didn't find it that. That was not my complaint, at least.
Yeah, well, there we go. One thumbs down, one thumbs up. See, on the BAMP, sometimes we do disagree, but you know what we do? We shake hands and we move on, and we'll argue about it again.
And I don't think Matt's dumb for liking it. And also, I think an important distinction, both of us still found things we liked and disliked, even though we're on opposite opinions at the end. Like, they're still good in this, and they're still bad in this from both perspectives. And I think that's a healthy way to view a movie, really. You know?
No, you're right. I think I'm dumb for liking it, but I'm allowed to say that. So,
and I'm not mad at people for liking this one. I feel like maybe people need to calm down with some of the exaggerations. Like, let's not dub him a master. He really, not even criticizing him, he hasn't made that many movies compared to, like, a Wes Craven or, you know...
John Carpenter.
Man, that's a master of horror, there. So, yeah. I mean, maybe calm down, everybody.
Horror is always prone to hyperbole. It's either the scariest film of all time, or the director is a new visionary, or from the mind of... always seems to be attributed to horror films. But, you know, I had a decent time with it whilst acknowledging that it is just a load of old schlock. But again, like JB says, I totally also understand why people are watching this and just thinking, well, that literally was nonsense. So we would love to hear what you guys think about it. And like I say, we'll dive into it more in our spoiler episode in the next few days, but let us know what you think. However, right now we are going to move on to our next segment, which we like to call Chuffed Headlines. In this section, John and myself, we've scoured the pop culture sides of the internet for a headline, movie or pop culture headline that's caught our attention, and we like to fill the other one in on what's going on. So, JB, what have you found this week?
So, I found that Marvel has added 4 more movies to its release slate, going quite a bit in advance. Basically, what we're looking at, folks, is for a while it was 2 Marvel movies a year. And then we slowly saw it start to increase. But now we're looking at every year for the next 4 years, including this year, at least 4 movies. So we have 4 movies this year with 2 more to go. We got Eternals and technically Spider-Man No Way Home, which is a Sony-Marvel collaboration. Next year we get Doctor Strange, Thor, Black Panther 2, The Marvels, directed by Nia DaCosta. 2023, it looks like we're getting 5 movies. Which 2 we know about, with Ant-Man Quantumanium, and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, but then 3 unofficial releases. We don't have titles yet. The last Marvel trailer that we got alluded to a Fantastic Four movie. There was a clear 4, but it did not say for sure. But we know that it's coming. We know that we're getting a Mahershala Ali Blade. And I think there's a couple other ones that maybe we know are probable, but we haven't heard official. But so there's 5 movies in 2023, 3 of which we don't have titles for, and then now 4 movies scheduled for 2024, February, May, July, and November.
Man.
And that's not counting all the shows that we know we're getting, right? Like, of course, we know we're getting shows. Because we're still getting Hawkeye, which trailer dropped this week. And
yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that in a minute.
I just watched it earlier. I think now it's relevant because that's all I got. I mean, that's one before I answer the hot question. How do you feel about all these Marvel movies coming?
Oh man, I don't know. I hear that horrible tagline of fatigue. Franchise fatigue. 4 Marvel films a year plus the shows, which you're going to assume is going to be at least 2 shows a year at the very least. I don't know, man. That's one every 3 months. At what point do you generally do start to think, man, I've got to try and keep up with all this? And we've said before, there comes a time where, you know, people have to pick and choose what films they see, because there is just in general, there's more films coming out now than ever before. Theatrically, they're never going to release. Well, they have actually. What am I talking about? They're not going to. I was about to say they're never going to release an MCU film on Disney Plus. They did. They're not going to make a habit, I don't think, of releasing their tentpole films on Disney Plus.
Yeah, they've already said Eternals will not drop on Disney Plus. So.
Exactly. So if for fans, it's great, because if this was Star Wars and you told me you were getting 3 films here, whatever for, I'd be in. However, I would, in all honesty, I would then start to think, you know, how much is too much? You know what. I believe in Kevin Feige, and I believe that the stories will be there, but yeah. I don't know. It is what it is. It's fine.
I agree, and yet the difference, I think, between Star Wars and Marvel is, for what we've gotten so far from Star Wars, it has been always centered around one story, right? It's always around the Skywalker saga. Where this, well, I'm sure we're going to get at least 1 or 2 of those movies are going to be the Avengers-esque team-up movie, where we get, most of them are standalone films.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if we disconnect them from the Marvel Universe, if we think of them as standalone movies, it doesn't feel quite as overwhelming, because you wouldn't have to see all of them.
No,
the fact that you know there will be a team-up movie makes you feel an obligation to see all of them. Mm-hmm. And that's rough, especially because we were also told by Feige that the shows are also canonical and you have to see both. Look, that's a lot to keep up with.
Sam is now Captain America, and if you missed out on Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you might think, well, hold on, what's going on here? That was a quick transition.
I assume one of those movies that we don't have a title for is the Captain America 4 movie with Sam as Captain America, which we're told he's doing.
Anthony Mackie isn't Chris Evans either. Well, I'm just going to throw that out.
Right.
I think you're right. Shang-Chi, I mentioned last week, felt disconnected almost from the MCU, because it didn't feel like there were references and hints, obviously one character in particular, but I watched that and felt like it was almost like a standalone comic book film. So I think you're right. If they can go in with that approach, like these films do just feel like individual character pieces, then they have no issue with that then.
genre fatigue is also a thing though, right? Like, we watched Westerns become so ubiquitous in the 50s that they started to fade. And then there was the resurgence with the spaghetti Westerns in the 60s and 70s.
Slashers themselves as well.
Complete drops, right? Like, in the 80s, Westerns were dead. Like, you did not do Westerns. And still, to this day, Westerns are a rare treat when we get one. And most of the time, they're bad.
You got the slashers of the 80s, which gave way to, you know, really watered down crappy versions in the early 90s and Scream brought it back. But even then, that
parody.
Was a satire, a parody of that, which then also sadly spawned a lot more sort of trash slashers. So you're right. It's just, you can have too much of some one thing where it becomes diluted. But so far, 35 films in, they haven't done that.
We're getting some satire with superhero genre, with The Boys and Invincible, where it's taking the genre and flipping it on its head. Even Brightburn, which I didn't enjoy, but it parodies the idea of the genre. It takes what you expect and flips you on your head. So we're already seeing the parody happen. And there was even the really bad superhero movie when they did the epic movie, Date Movie. There was a superhero movie parody, which was real trash.
Like Kick-Ass or Kick-Ass for us guys as well. So you had superhero-esque films, and there are other ones as well. So
Gunn's Super, which is a really underseen movie with Dwight Wilson. Rainn Wilson, Dwight from The Office.
Dwight, come on.
And now Elliot Page was the co-star in that. I really like that movie, but super dark, very James Gunn-esque. But pre-Guardians, James Gunn-esque, so very dark and satirical. But it exists, but I like the genre. Speaking of Hawkeye trailer, which is, I think now is a good thing. I am a big Hailee Steinfeld fan. I've been everything she's done basically that I've seen, I've enjoyed. I think she's terrific.
And she's a fabulous
actress. Seems like she has fun doing this stuff still. Like, to me in the trailer, she's just having a good time. And I like seeing someone who appears to enjoy what they're doing as opposed to like
Bruce Willis. Renner.
Okay, I like Jeremy Renner. A lot of people seem to dislike him. I think he's cool as Hawkeye.
I think he's fine, but
I think in the trailer, their chemistry seems solid to me. It's very similar to his interactions with Pietro and Wanda in Age of Ultron, which I like that little dynamic. Some of my favorite one-liners are Hawkeye in that movie. I'm kind of in on this. Obviously, Batman's one of my favorite heroes. Batman has no power, so I'm kind of all in on the heroes with no powers anyways, who are just really good at something. And Hawkeye's really good at something. So I'm intrigued for the show. My big thing is I want to see I'm expecting Florence Pugh's character from Black Widow to be at least mentioned because of the end credits of Black Widow. No spoilers, but there's a reference to Hawkeye. And then I'm curious who the bad guys are going to be in this because, it looks like this is a passing the torch show, like Captain America Winter Soldier, Falcon Winter Soldier was, which it is called now Captain Winter Soldier. That's what this show appears to be. This will be Renner's exiting, I assume, and Hailee Steinfeld maybe stepping into a role, maybe being in a movie or just continuing in a series. I'm up for that. And so far, I know you can't do this, because you still haven't watched Loki. The Marvel shows have been mostly really good, so I'm on board for Hawkeye.
I'm seeing more people now online getting, speaking of fatigue, they're kind of saying, it's funny we mentioned the four films, but with the addition of the TV shows, I've seen a few people who have called themselves, on my Twitter, who have called themselves MCU fanboys, who are starting to get a little bit washed out by the fact that they've got all these films to watch, plus the shows do link fairly intrinsically. There is quite a lot. And like you say, I haven't seen Loki and I haven't seen What If yet. And I know that's not necessarily canonical, but with the multiverse, who knows? Even then, I feel like, damn, I've missed one. I've got to catch up on that before I can watch. But I saw this trailer and it's going to be set at Christmas. They've got a very big holiday vibe to it. But I also think that was detrimental to the trailer. I thought the choice of music was very good. Love the song, but I didn't like it playing over the action. And I thought Hailee Steinfeld looked good. The character looked good. I think she came across well. Like you said, she's got kind of like this free flowing energy. She's got a bounce and a vibe to her performance.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Renner, his Hawkeye Clint is, he is brooding. That is his character. That's always been him. So there is going to be that dichotomy between them of the dynamics, but I don't know. Oh, God, I've said this about every single one, but I'm not particularly enthused by a Hawkeye series. What got me interested was Hayley Steinfeld was in it and Florence Pugh was returning as Yelena. Those two superbly talented actresses in the same show, sold. I mean, yeah. Having seen Yelena Belova in Black Widow, I thought she was fantastic in that, Florence Pugh. So that gets me excited. We're going to see a Steve Rogers Broadway show as well. So there's that.
That seems to be the hype from the trailer, right?
I know.
Everyone's talking about that.
And you know that they're going to do it. There's going to be, like they did with Baron, I can't think of his name now, from Falcon and the Winter Soldier. They're going to release, yeah. when he was dancing, they're going to release like a 5-minute song and dance of this from this Captain America show, and we're all going to lap it up. But I don't know. This didn't really grab my attention too much. It hasn't really made me think, I really, really need to see that. What I did enjoy was the holiday visuals, but I just didn't like the choice of song playing over the top of it. But I'm very, very open to being proved wrong again about these shows.
Yeah, see what happens. What was your headline for the week, bud?
Mine seems to be, I'm getting bored of mentioning this damn film, but it's coming out in a few weeks' time. But it seems to be, other than like James Bond, it's arguably the biggest release to come out in the next 3 months. And it's Dune. But this is actually playing into something we've mentioned on the show, which is why I bring it up again. I do apologise for bringing up Dune again. We've mentioned the fact that we don't really think it's going to do gangbusters at the box office. We think it's going to be a 2049 situation. Loved across the board pretty much, but doesn't make the money. And Warner Brothers have come out, according to Warner Brothers insiders, any kind of sequel to Dune, because this is part one, it's always been marketed as part one, Dune part two, they're only going to green light it if this upcoming part one does well on HBO Max. So I think Warner Brothers have kind of conceded that, okay, we know it's maybe not going to blow the doors off at the box office, but what we do want to see is big numbers on HBO Max, which I read that, and I'm not going to lie to you, big man, I was taken aback by that, because I mean, recently we've seen is it Paramount have said, you know, they're going to cut back on making original films because they want to focus more on bringing old films back and remaking them in their streaming service. And now Warner Brothers, HBO Max is already a fabulous service, even if we haven't got it, but they're saying that, you know, they're not going to sign off on a sequel unless it does big numbers on HBO Max. So, you know, is that, and Denis Villeneuve is, you know, he, as far as he's concerned, he's getting that sequel, but, and he's also telling people, you got to go and watch it in a theatre. Don't watch it on streaming. So we've got the director saying, don't watch it at home. You've got to see it on the biggest screen possible. Fine. We've spoken about that. But now we've also got Warner Brothers apparently saying, that's fine, Denis, but we want it to do big numbers on HBO Max.
I interpret that as not saying it can't have a big box office. You know, like, I don't think they're going to ignore if it does really well at the box office. I think they're acknowledging that box office will inherently be smaller because it's on HBO Max, but they're not only looking at box office. That's what I'm hoping they mean. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the intelligent response. I hope. I obviously don't know.
Their director's saying, go to the cinema, and this, and HBO and Warner Brothers, the money makers, are saying, well, yeah, fine, do that, but we really want to see big numbers for our streaming service. So, but you know, there's loggerheads there.
They definitely make more money off of box office than they make off HBO, because
it's new subscribers they need.
Right. And also, though, like, HBO Max, I pay $15 a month. I don't just get Dune, I get everything.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of content for that $15 that they're not, and some of it they own. In that, like their old movies, they have that they can just rotate in and out, sure. But Dune is new, and they have not recouped the money from it yet. So they definitely want the box office. And there's no streaming amount is going to recoup the cost of that movie, which is where a lot of people are concerned about. Both Netflix's model, because Netflix is throwing a lot of money at the movies they're making, but there's no way they're recouping that. And then not in terms of their collective like existence. Apple's going for like an A24 of streaming services where they're doing very selective product, but stuff that others. I am too. I'm like, oh, cool. That's cool that you're being so selective. Honestly, that's in Apple's original kind of model that they were like the standout different. They went so mainstream for a while. Right. And but now it seems like they're kind of re-embracing that. That's cool. I hope that's they mean that we're going to look at both sides. So if the box office is bad, that does not mean they won't get a sequel if people are watching it on HBO Max, which is what they should do, right? Because, like, I think if Disney were to look at Black Widow and compare it to Shang-Chi, where those models are different, right? Like, Shang-Chi was only in theaters. Yeah. Black Widow was same day both. If they were just to say, well, look, Black Widow didn't perform at the box office, it's like, yeah, but how did it do on streaming sales? Mm-hmm. Because you didn't do that to Shang-Chi.
Look at Shang-Chi. We mentioned last week, Shang-Chi wasn't a recognizable character like Natasha Romanoff was, and it wasn't the culmination of that particular character's journey. You know, Shang-Chi blew the doors away as a new, exciting character.
And the elements of that movie that look like Crouching Tiger or Hero don't traditionally play well in American audiences in terms of box office. They do well artistically, but they're not, you know, the big draws. So the fact that it still brought people in, it speaks volumes. That, again, I don't know that Black Widow would have been as good at box office as Shang-Chi, because Shang-Chi is new. People have opinions of Black Widow already. Some people don't like that character. Some people find characters with no powers not interesting. There's a lot of factors that you could play into it, but I still think it would have done better if it wasn't also same day streaming.
Oh, well, undoubtedly.
And I hope that Warner Brothers is taking that into consideration. And if they are, cool. I think that's a reasonable thing to do, is that you should look at both because it's on both. So how did it do in both? You know, like Mortal Kombat, they're supposed to be doing all sorts of other stuff with, because it did really well on streaming. So, okay, cool. If that's what we're wanting, I honestly, I know a lot of filmmakers are mad at Warner Brothers, and I do agree for the most part with Villeneuve and Nolan that most movies like Dune or like Tenet are built to be on a big screen. Not all movies need that treatment. And while I prefer going to the big screen, I totally understand if people want to watch it in a comfortable situation. And again, more and more people have pretty nice home theater setups. Not everybody, but people who care about movies often have a pretty nice TV or a pretty nice projection screen. You probably have surround sound now. Like, a lot of it you can get at affordable pricing. And some of us get when we shouldn't because we have credit cards. You know, like...
you naughty man.
We do our thing.
You're right.
That's it.
But, I mean, Warner Bros. Haven't covered himself in glory this year. Denis Villeneuve has already said that, you know, there's... You know, he's already accused him of having no love for cinema or the audience. And he's also made it very clear that he wanted to shoot Dune Part 1 and 2 back to back. But the studio said, nope. So they haven't, by the sounds of it, they haven't, I mean, we've given our thoughts on Villeneuve's comments about streaming and theatre. And I'm not going to go into that again. But on the other flip side, Warner Brothers haven't really been that supportive either, really. I mean, it's something like this, you know, you'd think that shooting it back to back could potentially be a money saver for one, and especially if you've got the HBO Max to fall back on. I just don't see why they wouldn't do that, maybe they are pushing their streaming service more so. And I realistically, practically speaking, I understand that as well. There's a huge investment in that, and it's not, I don't think it's wrong to say that streaming is the future for a lot of things. It's certainly been the future for TV. It's revolutionized, to quote unquote, TV series are now streaming series. People don't really talk about television series as much. Certainly in my neck of the woods, it's more the streaming series. I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where streaming films overtake theatrical releases, but, you know, I don't blame Warner Brothers for protecting their investment and trying to push their streaming service. I don't think there are also on the, my final point is, think you'll probably agree, is I don't think we have to worry though. I think we're going to get a Dune sequel either way. It's going to do well either on HBO Max or at the box office, or hopefully both.
Right. Now, before we're done with our headline segment, I got a very sad headline popped up while we were recording. I'm a big fan of the comedian Norm Macdonald. He has died.
Oh no.
At age 61, I guess he's been battling cancer. He was on very iconic Saturday Night Live Weekend Update host, one of my favorites of history. My favorite portrayal that he did on SNL was probably when he was Burt Reynolds on the Celebrity Jeopardy bits. Always cracked me up. Big hat. Big hat. And then he did a movie called Dirty Work that a lot of people didn't see, but I always really, really found super funny. It has Yeah, it is. But I enjoyed that movie. I watched it probably far too many times.
Chris Farley.
I like him in it. Yeah, Chris Farley has a small part where he's a guy who had his nose bitten off by a Saigon whore, I believe is the expression from the movie. That is a quote, not my opinion of the character. But yeah, just sad whenever a celebrity that we look up to has passed away. Especially 61 is quite young. I'm turning 40 in a year, so 61 is far too close for my liking. But, you know, may he rest in peace. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, very sad news. So thoughts to the family and friends there of Norm Macdonald. So with that, let's move on then to our next segment. And it's simply titled Media Consumption, where John and myself, we allay the world with the movies, TVs, series, video games, music, podcasts, which aren't ours, books, comic books, whatever it might be, anything that we've used to pass the time since the last episode. And I always say it because I always mean it. JB's always got a fabulous selection of diverse films. So what have you been watching and listening to, man?
So I've gone real into stuff, man, but Blank Check, they're continuing with the John Carpenter series. So they just did their episode on The Thing. Really great episode. Definitely worth checking out. And then I am a Patreon member of Blank Check because I am obsessed with that podcast. So the bonus episode for Someone's Watching Me, which is a John Carpenter TV movie that now I have to freaking watch because it's apparently like a rehash of Rear Window, which I am a big, big, big fan of Rear Window. So I really want to see this now. So I'm going to end up either renting or buying it. It's like $10 to buy and it's like $3 to rent, but it's only in like 480p. Like it's a really bad transfer, but it's like the only way to see it. So I'm going to end up still buying it because I really want to watch it. Cause I was like, it sounds really interesting. And man, I love John Carpenter. Like I his later stuff, I have not seen many of, but, and I kind of hear it drops off pretty hard after like the 90s, like the movies start to really lose their quality.
Yes, I've heard that. Like, yeah, the last thing we did was called The Ward, I think, which, you know, wasn't received all that well.
And I have not seen most of the 90s and 2000 Carpenter stuff yet. I will be watching it as we go. But his, man, from Assault on Precinct 13, and honestly, even Dark Star, as much of a student film as it is, you see like a lot of his style going into it. Up until, for sure, at least Big Trouble Little China, are just masterful. Like, I love almost every movie that he's attached to.
His run through the 80s, late 70s to almost like the late 80s, early 90s was, dare I say, almost unparalleled because, you know, the quality of those films.
And they're hit or miss in the box office, but almost all of them have become big cult followed films. Like They Live, obviously, is a satirical movie. It's not going to work for everybody. But to me, John Carpenter gets camp when he does camp, and he definitely gets horror when he does horror. With that, I watched Christine, which I definitely watched as a kid, but I've never watched as an adult. And my brain was definitely only remembering little fragments of it. I had a blast watching Christine. I thought it was super fun. I love that he makes a slasher like villain a car. Like, what if slasher was a car? Because there's so many scenes in the movie where it's like, man, this is so much like Halloween. It's fantastic. And then after we saw Malignant, my friend and my cousin, we went and got lunch. They came back over to my place. We talked for like 3 or 4 hours. We got some frozen pizzas, and then we watched. They had never seen Big Trouble in Little China, which is a favorite of mine. So I got to introduce them.
Carpenter again.
And Carpenter again, and like after watching Malignant, which we had heard was campy, then you get to hear basically Kurt Russell doing his John Wayne, which I never really picked up on, but his cadence in that movie, especially when he's on the CB radio, has such a John Wayne vibe. I was just like, oh man, he's clearly doing like a Wayne kind of, because it is a satire on like the modern American action hero. And it's so great. And they had a blast watching that. And it was so fun to introduce that movie to two people who'd heard of it, but never saw it. After watching Shang-Chi, I've been wanting to watch more of the, like, the Crouching Tiger style kung fu movies. So I watched Hero for the first time, which was so great. I didn't know that it had a Rashomon vibe as far as the storytelling goes, that we have two guys sitting in a room telling different versions of the same story that we get to see in these amazingly visualized, like one time it's all red and then the next time it's all green to help you kind of distinguish which version of the story you're hearing. It's so great. And also stars Tony Leung from, I think it's Tony Leung, from Shang-Chi. So it was another reason for me to like zero in on that movie. That dude is such a great actor, like insanely great. How much emotion he conveys.
Asian cinemas. He's called one of their greatest actors.
Yeah, just I'm so excited. I finally got the Stepford Wives, so I have now completed the suggested movies of the 70s from Alex Ross Perry. The original Stepford Wives, I really liked that movie a lot. I thought it was really good. My transfer is not the best because, again, it's hard to get a hold of. I don't know if there's some kind of licensing things. Mm-hmm. I have a DVD copy. The DVD does not have any captions, which was real tough because some of the audio was like really quiet in some parts. And I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. And it's all dialogue. Like, I really can't hear you. I wish I could turn captions on. Nope, not an option. So that was upsetting. Not the movie's fault. That's just whoever released the disc. It's a shame that it's that version of it. I did watch the new film Kate, which is a Netflix original.
I've been meaning to watch that, but I'm also slightly worried because of towards the synopsis.
It's another kind of wannabe John Wick movie, but it's Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I always like, and she's really good in this. If you like her, I think she's at the level you're used to her being. Some of the action is extremely violent. I was just like, holy cow, that was like super brutal. It's fine. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's not like you must watch it right now kind of thing, but it's definitely, if you like a John Wick kind of violent action movie, is nowhere near as good as John Wick, and the world building definitely doesn't hold up. It's also got, there's like a Crank vibe to it. There's like a ticking clock kind of a, you know, like she's going to die. She knows she's going to die. That's not a spoiler. That happens in that's the setup of the movie, is that she's poisoned and she goes on a revenge spree before she dies. So there's like, you know, there's some of that kind of thing in it. It's fine. I found it very watchable. It's a little long, I think. Not actually, but it feels a little long. Like, it maybe five, maybe one scene less, and it would be fine. For Movie Club this week, we are covering Mother, the Bong Joon-ho film from 2009. Yes. So not the Darren Aronofsky Mother or any of the other movies that are called Mother. There's like four other ones.
There's no exclamation mark in this one.
Dude, this movie, I watched it right before going to see Malignant, and this was the type of movie that when you watch it, you remember why you love movies so much. Like, it was that, like, this is what cinema can be. Like, I was, from the opening sequence, which is so random and doesn't make sense when you first see it, but makes total sense later in the movie. It's so masterful. I love Bong Joon-ho. Like, everything I've seen of his has just worked for me on, like, every level. This movie's weird. It will make you feel uncomfortable at times, but it definitely wants you to feel that way. It's such a compelling movie. There's a really cool kind of flip on him. There's a scene where, like, you think you're supposed to feel one way, and then you realize halfway through that you should still feel that way, but it for different reasons than you thought. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Can't wait to talk to Corey about it. I hope she liked it as much as I did. And then, Matt, I told you I completed my Alex Ross Perry list. I've watched all the horror movies he recommended on his episode of the podcast, which was the Halloween episode. He recommended all these horror movies that, like, you really needed to understand the context. I've completed that list. 15 movies, knocked it out in less than a month. But I, at the beginning of this year, had goals to complete other lists. I've completed the Martin Scorsese list. I've watched all of his films. But I have been working at the AFI Top 100 list for a couple years now.
You have? Damn, I remember you talking about this on old BAMP episodes.
Yeah. I've hit 80 movies out of 100. Like, so big milestone. I've got 20 movies left. Some of them are very challenging because they're really long, like Ben-Hur Intolerance, which I don't even want to watch as it is, but it's like 3.5 hours long, I think, for Intolerance. There are several silent films, which I will admit, as much as I don't want to be that guy, silent films don't appeal to me. Mm-hmm. Because they inherently require you to give it 100% of your attention because you can't just listen to the dialogue. So you really have to watch it. And that's not always easy. Although a lot of them are less than 70 minutes, right? Like, that's the other conceit of many silent films are a lot shorter than our traditional films. But so I've got 20 left, but I've watched two big ones this week, both Altman films. I watched MASH for the first time, something I couldn't get when we covered 1970 on astrology. I did finally get a hold of it. I really liked a lot of it. I didn't like the whole football sequence of that movie. It comes out of nowhere. I'm like, why are we playing football? What's happening? I'm sure it's commentary that I'm not getting because of the time period. There's a few other scenes where I don't know if I fully get the commentary. Obviously, there's some problematic stuff with, like, the treatment of women. And there's a reference to a character thinks he might be gay and, like, the reaction to it. It's not Mm-hmm. It's not as bad as it could be, but it's also, like, it's still problematic. It's 70s problematic, but there's some interesting stuff still there to dissect from that. And I'm a huge Donald Sutherland fan. I think the more I see of him, especially in the 70s, I just think the dude's masterful all the time. But then I watched Nashville, which is also a long one. It was a 3 hour or 2 hour 40 minutes, so just under 3 hours. Dude, I was like, an hour in, I was like feeling really like, oh my God, how is this movie like 5 stars? I'm so bored.
Oh, I hate that.
But then when it was over, I was like, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen ever. And I don't understand what, like how it did that. Cause I was wow. so not invested. Okay. And then by the end, I was like, this is insane. Like there are 24 main characters in Nashville. Like it's not, there's 24 characters. No, 24 people's stories are being told like freaking Endgame. And there didn't require 22 movies of prequel to get them. Like it's nuts when you say it like that, right? Like we the all
said, gets oh, it.
Endgame worked because we had seen 22 movies to get to Endgame or Infinity War, whichever. They both work the same way. This movie has 24 characters who you were meeting for the first time. That they're like it were. In some ways, Slackers now, I will say, reminds me of it, but I saw Slackers first, and Slackers has these like characters that are barely connected together, and Summertime from this past year, which I saw as a musical that also has these characters where you kind of weave them in and out. Nashville definitely does that first to my now viewing. I don't know if there's something that came before. So just the structure alone is really compelling, but man, I don't like country music. Like sometimes there's an exception, but mostly I'm not a big fan of country music. So the movie had that against it. It still pulled me in, still made me appreciate it. I don't get all the commentary again. There's definitely stuff being like opinions and satire being put forward that I don't know I fully grasp, but I was still like captivated by what the movie did. And so by the end I was really into it. And I think the first hour I was on my phone a little bit and I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to really make it through all of this tonight. Maybe I'll watch it in parts. But then by the end, my phone was sitting down and I was watching every minute just like, wow, I am so into this all of a sudden. Like, I don't know what changed, but it feels like it's the movie. I think the movie kind of slowly brings you into it. And then the last hour and a half went by so fast. I couldn't believe that I finished the whole movie. So yeah, if you haven't seen Nashville, it's on the top 100 on AFI, but it's also an Altman film that many people cite as their favorite. Ehrlich gave it 5 stars. It's on Criterion. I mean, it's got a reputation, obviously, way before myself, in my opinion, but it definitely worked for me.
Man, I was just looking it up. Now considered Robert Altman's magnum opus and one of the greatest films of all time. And it's totally slipped my rate. I mean, I've heard of it, but it isn't never in those kind of glowing terms. And now having a quick Google, damn, it's very highly regarded. So maybe I'll slip it on the old Blu-ray player at some point soon. Is it on streaming? No, I can watch it on YouTube for £2.
I bought it on Vudu, which is where I buy a lot of my digital content. But
well, I was looking at Mother, the Bong Joon-ho film. That's on Amazon Prime over here. I have Prime, so I should probably get onto that. That's what I said to you by WhatsApp. One of the only Bong Joon-ho films I haven't actually seen. His mother, yeah. And to hear you speak about it like that is, you know, if it's recommended, I mean,
yeah.
Whilst you were talking, I was just looking at the run of Carpenter films I mentioned: Assault on Precinct 13, Halloween, The Fog, Escape from New York, The Thing, Christine, Starman, Big Trouble in Little China, Prince of Darkness, and They Live. I mean, that's a hell of a run.
And the only one on that list I have not seen is Prince of Darkness, which I will be watching before the podcast episode drops for Blank Check. So I do have access to it. It's just one. And then I think after They Live is Memoirs of an Invisible Man. And I think that's when his quality starts to take a little bit.
I wasn't as keen on that one. In the Mouth of Madness came after that. And I did like that one. And then it flip flops from there onwards. But so that's a hell of a run. I think a lot of
it is.
Directors would be like to get that kind of acclaim in that matter. So, again, like I say, maybe not box office, but critically now and cult following. John always trumps me when it comes to what he watches. He's always got a diverse range. But I've been watching a few things again. It's been busy here at Shea Hud again this week for COVID related reasons. Not me or my nipper, but homeschooling and working from home has taken its toll. But I've been able to watch a few things. I listened to the Nightmare on Film Street podcast where they just discussed Blood Diner from 1987, which is a film which I thought was fine. So it was interesting to hear about people who thought maybe it was thought of it in a more positive light, sorry, than I did. But I always enjoy listening to what the guys and girls over there have to say. Another film on Something Street I watched, I signed back up to Shudder this week because, why wouldn't I? It's horror, Shudder, it's my kind of thing. So I signed up to that and I was browsing through it and this film came out, Vanishing on 7th Street. Oh, what's that about? Something, you know, mysteriously overnight, everyone in Detroit just disappears apart from a few people. Okay, it's a mystery thriller. I'm all up for that. I turn it on. Anakin Skywalker's in it. Okay, maybe I'll find it, see how this goes. Thandie Newton's in it as well.
Ooh.
Okay. This is going, okay, fine. I don't, regardless of the hate, I don't think Aidan Quinn is that bad of an actor. In the right role. Thandie Newton, I really like her. And this and John Leguizamo is in it as well. It was okay, it's a low budget horror which plays on that quite a lot. It's more about atmosphere than anything else, and it's got a solid story. It's pretty well acted. I actually think Thandie Newton is the weakest link of the film.
Oh wow.
And when you say that, that's never usually a good thing, but I just think she may be phoning it in somewhat, but the film was fine. I wouldn't ever sort of say, right, you've all got to rush out and see this. If you really like low budget atmospheric horror that swings a few times, then check it out. Vanishing on 7th Street. I don't know if I mentioned this on one of the previous episodes, but I couldn't remember, but I also endured He's All That on Netflix. I can't remember if I mentioned it on the last week's one. I don't believe I did, but in short, it's awful. it's really bad. Addison Rae, the world-renowned Academy Award-nominated actress. The TikToker. Addison Rae stars in this alongside that guy from the show I can't remember. Cobra Kai is in. It's She's All That, but gender-reversed.
Yes.
Addison Rae has to try and get this guy, get the loser kid and shape him up to be the prom king. It doesn't really work when the loser kid is clearly a good looking guy in the first place, but it is just dreadful. I thought it was going to be a satirical commentary on influencers and the TikTok generation, because it started off that way, actually. There was a bit after the intro, I was like, okay, hold on. Maybe they're going somewhere with this. Maybe this is going to be cleverer than I thought, but no, it devolves into a rom-com, but the worst kind of rom-com. And I know that might not be good to your ears because all rom-coms are good, but it just feels vacuous and shallow. And it's crap, basically. But Netflix are going for that TikTok generation by the sounds of it. If you like The Kissing Booth and that kind of dirge, you're gonna really quite enjoy He's All That, but it wasn't for me. I still preferred it to Demonic, though. I'd happily watch that again over Demonic. I rewatched Ghostbusters, the original and best, of course, because I've just done an episode about that for the back row. Speaking about Ghostbusters, and of course we've got Afterlife coming out in 2 months now, which we're both very excited for, JB and myself. But
yes,
how can you? Every time I could watch Ghostbusters weekly, as I do The Exorcist, and still enjoy. And I still find new things about Ghostbusters which I never noticed. Like for example, this time when Ray, Peter and Egon are in the elevator at the hotel, going to go and get Slimer. And then you got the big no smoking sign, and Ray's like, switch me on. And Peter's like, you've got like an unlicensed nuclear accelerator in the back. And have we tested this? No. And Egon fires up Ray. And as soon as he does it, Venkman and Egon both just start backing away really slowly. I never noticed that, but it made me howl of laughter yesterday. There's a couple of other things I hadn't noticed, but Ghostbusters is one of the best films of them all, so always happy to revisit that. And I ventured out to watch Annette as well, which I believe is streaming for my friends stateside, but over here it is theatrical at the minute, and it is coming out on Amazon Prime in the next few weeks. But it's a Leos Carax film. It's his first English language feature, and it stars Adam Driver, Marion Cotillard and Simon Helberg, amongst others. And it's really quite weird. It seems to be fairly divisive. 70% RT. Empire gave it 5. I've seen other people not give it 5. Basically, Adam Driver is... I'm kind of butchering the synopsis. Adam Driver is a stand-up comedian. He's a very kind of... He's like a shock comedian. He doesn't really have an act. He just abuses people. And he's kind of like... He's this controversial comedian stand-up. And he falls in love with Anne. That's the synopsis. Anne is played by Marion Cotillard. And she is an up-and-coming opera star. So you've got a... You know, it's like a class divide almost type thing going on. And, you know, it tells their story and when they bring a child into the world. But it's done in literally in the form of music. There is no spoken word in this film apart from Adam Driver's stand-up. It is all music. And I loved that's an exaggeration. I liked everything about this film apart from the film itself. Adam Driver is unreal in this. Adam Driver is such a powerful presence. We know he's a good actor, but he is such a presence that it's unbelievable in this film. Marion Cotillard doesn't really get much to do, which is a shame when you've got someone of her talent, ignoring The Dark Knight Rises. Given she does not give her anything really to work with, seems criminal almost. Simon Helberg's good. Visually, it looks very good. The opening song is really good, and it's a long, I know you'll appreciate, it's a one long tracking shot following them from inside somewhere, walking across the street and out there. Really, really technically good. And the whole film was technically excellent. There's some fabulous puppetry as well on show, but I just wasn't taken by the characters. The songs were written by the Sparks Brothers and performed as well for the most part. But
oh, that was why I knew about the movie. I could not remember why.
I thought that would be why, because I didn't realize it till afterwards. I thought I recognized them in the beginning in this recording studio. But maybe had a quick look. Oh, it is them. The songs are fine, but I just found that they didn't really resonate with what was happening on screen. The lyrics weren't particularly memorable or kind of affecting, I think the word is, or powerful. You know, they were just good songs, but they didn't really make me think, or I wasn't swayed or captivated by the words in the songs. So that was a bit disappointing. But it's a technically and visually wonderful and superbly acted by Adam Driver, but I don't know, it felt very shallow, felt very hollow for me, and it just didn't, and it really upsets me because I really, really, really wanted to like this film, and it seems like the kind of film I would really quite enjoy, but can only be honest and say it didn't really work for me. I think I knocked it straight down the middle with a 5 out of 10, but maybe I can't remember, 5 or 5.5 out of 10. Straight, you know, I can't bring myself to rate it higher because I loved so much of it. If I generally came out feeling empty, hollow, and disappointed by the end of the film, by the credits, I was disappointed and I couldn't wait to get up and check my phone and, you know, do other things. So that was a shame. But hey, you know, you might watch it and absolutely love it. There are scenes in it which have become infamous already, but I hope you watch it and love it, and I hope the listeners do as well. But for me, it didn't quite work. But that was me though this week. I've got a ton of other films I want to watch, and I'm going to swat up over the next week on loads of new films, but that's what I've been watching this week, my friend. So, other than Ghostbusters, not particularly that great, but that means that I've had to stay bloody awesome like you have, John. But we have to find ways to stay bloody awesome. We can get up and do this show, and we can give you an awesome show, but we don't want to do that. We want to give you a bloody awesome show. So each week we have to find new ways to keep ourselves entertained, keep ourselves motivated, keep the bloody awesomeometer at the high end of the scale. So what have you been up to, my friend, this week?
So my bloody awesome moment was bonding with pizza and a movie. I mentioned already watching Big Trouble in Little China with my cousin and my friend the other night. But so we spent a day. We saw Malignant, which was a bonding experience because we were all shared our kind of not happy yet still entertained vibe from it. Then we went to a lunch. We went to the Hibachi restaurant, so we got some food. We talked for a while. They came back to my house. We talked some more, and then we got pizza. We were gonna order delivery, and it was Saturday night, so like all the pizza places had like a 2-hour wait.
Of course,
like, well, that's ridiculous. It's already like 7 o'clock. We're not gonna wait till like 9 to get the pizza and then start a movie. So we went to our local grocery store, got some frozen pizzas, a 6-pack of carbonated beverages of a Blue Moon persuasion.
Oh.
And we were going to pick a movie, and I'm like, what should we pick? And I just purchased digitally Big Trouble Little China. I own it on Blu-ray, but I wanted a digital copy because I have problems. And it was sitting like on the top of my screen on our Fire Stick. And I was like, have you guys ever seen Big Trouble Little China? And they were both like, no. And for my cousin, that was one of my grandpa's favorite movies. And he mm-hmm. didn't know that. And I was like, yeah. So I think this would be a good one. And we had a blast. I love that movie. I've seen it many, many times at this point. It's every time I get a chance to watch it, I tend to, because it's just really, it's so much fun. I love Kurt Russell. And man, it was just a blast. We were eating pizza, watching this movie, just having a good old time. And it was fun bonding with them both. And this is their first time meeting each other, and they spent basically the day together. So it's cool, like, watching my cousin, who is my friend, and then my friend, like, get to know each other and, like, I hope have become friends now too. You know, like I can't facilitate that, but it's cool. Like kind of, branching my circle out a little bit, you know, like, cause my other friend is also a work friend. So like someone I know from work, but we hang out a lot outside of work. And then now my cousin, who's one of my only family members who I see regularly now, which is still pretty new. It was a cool experience. So that's how I've been saying bloody awesome. What is about you, my friend?
Just having Blue Moon is bloody awesome. I've got to say, I tried that mango Blue Moon, and it was bloody awesome. So much that I went out and bought a few more bottles the next night. Thank you for that. They've only just brought it out over here. So I probably wouldn't have gone looking for it had you not sunk a couple. And you can never go wrong with pizza. My one is more graft, but it makes me feel bloody awesome. And as I said, I'm working from home at the minute. And I have the Padawan with me, as I have done for the last week and a half, and will do for the remainder of this week anyway. So I've been working from home, but I've also been back to homeschooling, which is always a joy and a slog at the same time. But it makes me feel bloody awesome, because by the end of it, when you look back at the work that's been completed, you know what it's like. You're a father, and you've been there to watch your daughter as she's, you know, she's picking up new skills or is able to do things which maybe weren't, you didn't know they could do it. I'm like, oh, do you know how you spell this word? Da-da-da-da-da. Damn, I'm,
yeah.
Fair enough. It's, you know, you get a kind of immense sense of pride that, you know, I always look back and think, oh, I remember when you were little and you were only in your rocker and all you could do was cry an awful lot. And now you're a little person who can spell these words and sort things into groups and is quite good at maths of your age, in fact. And it's really quite nice, and it's slightly more entertaining than doing actual work as well. So it's more a sense of pride, but I'll never be I always want to be like Burke, but I'll never be able to teach like Burke. But, you know, if I can help along the way in any way, then it's a bloody, bloody awesome feeling. So a bit of graft, but it's a satisfaction that comes along with it, my friend.
No way. I think that's great. And I totally, I miss the days of watching, you know. Now she's, not that she doesn't give me pride for different reasons, but she's so adult now. It's just like, you know, I miss those little moments. So enjoy them while they're there, because they age so fast.
Oh, you tell it. So do I. But you can never remove the memories, my friend. So they'll always be there. You can, however, this show will fade into memory, but it'll always be there for you to revisit, like Tears in Rain, possibly.
Oh.
We are going to be back again next week, of course. We'll be back on Monday with our spoiler review of Malignant, usually 10, 15 minutes. So pretty quick and snappy, that one. As far as the main show is concerned, well, we're back next week. And we're going to be reviewing the new Clint Eastwood film, Cry Macho. I think I'm looking forward to it, but it's Clint Eastwood, so I'm never not going to be intrigued by it. So, Cry Macho is our film for next week. And if you want to find out more about the BAMP, shoot us a message or let us know what you thought about Malignant, you can do on our social media. You can head over to Twitter and find us at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast. John, where can they find us on Instagram?
We are at Bloody Awesome Movie Pod.
On Facebook, we're also at Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. We do post on there as well for people who still use it religiously. If you want to find me, you can do whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. Search for What I Watch Tonight across the socials and Letterboxd, which I've just started using, and I'm now a patron of, as I always said I would be again. So Letterboxd as well. John, where can the world find you?
I'm at BerkReviews.com and at BerkReviews on all of your social media platforms. That's B-E-R-K Reviews.
Go check it out and go listen as well. And also on Letterboxd too. If you like what you've just heard, or you know of other people who like movie podcasts, or just two cool dudes, do let them know about the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. And please consider rating the show 5 stars on your podcast provider of choice, because it really helps the show grow. It gets more listeners in, and it just means we get extra chances to talk to other film fans, which is kind of what we're here for. So thank you everybody for listening. However, with that, I am going to tell you, just keep to stay bloody awesome. Oh no.
And keep watching movies. Blood, 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 blood